Good evening, and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Nick Blumberg. Third time's the charm? Governor J.B. Pritzker says yes.
I ran for governor in 2018 to change our story. I ran for governor in 2022 to keep telling our story. And I am running for governor in 2026 to protect our story.
Pritzker touts his administration's accomplishments as setting Illinois on the right path, as Republicans respond by calling him an out-of-touch tax and spender.
At the end of the day, every decision we make must center our young people.
Chicago's interim schools CEO says the deficit is worse than what her predecessor reported, as the teachers' union president says the district should borrow to avoid drastic cuts. Meantime, Chicago police agree not to search vehicles because of the smell of cannabis. Illinois joins a coalition of states suing the Trump administration over slashed funding as the Supreme Court grants Trump a partial victory on his birthright citizenship executive order. And
from early on, it was clear serving and protecting were inherently part of her DNA.
Mourners gather to lay Officer Crystal Rivera to rest. And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Mitchell Armantrout from the Chicago Sun-Times, Mila Kumpilova from Chalk Beach, Chicago, Melody Mercado from Block Club, Chicago, and from the Chicago Tribune, Steve Daniels. Thank you all for being here. Let's get right to it. Mitch, the Sun-Times had some reporting today on Officer Rivera's partner who accidentally shot her during a foot chase. What's the latest that we know?
Yeah, this is just a tragic case all around. I mean, this is an officer who was really early in her career on the force, mother of a young child. My colleagues at the Sun-Times and the Better Government Association basically found out that her partner, who inadvertently shot her in this case, again, another really young officer, only a few years on the force, and a little disturbing that he had more than a dozen complaints filed against him in just a few short years. Just kind of the latest case raising questions about training standards in CPD and, just preparing officers to land in situations like this.
Yeah, and obviously the difficulty and the danger of foot chases in any instance, no matter the experience of the officer. Certainly a tragic case that folks are going to be asking questions about going forward. Turning to Governor J.B. Pritzker, Mitch, after much speculation, he finally made it official that he is running for a third term. Why did the governor say he wants to run again?
Yeah, he basically says that he wants to protect Illinois from everything that Donald Trump is doing. And that's kind of been his message for almost a decade now. Like you said, he returned to the Grand Crossing Park Fieldhouse down on the south side. That's where he announced his first run back in 2017. He basically played through the greatest hits of his tenure so far. I mean, he talked about legalizing marijuana, increasing investments in education, his big infrastructure plan. Not a heck of a lot of new ideas, really, but basically his message is that what's happening in Illinois can work in other places. You know, I think that the speech that he made, it certainly was Illinois-focused, but, wouldn't take a lot of tweaks to sort of take that onto the presidential campaign trail, which we all know is something he's certainly thinking long and hard about. He's really just sort of, he wants to kind of keep the ship moving forward the way he's been doing it is basically the message so far.
Well, I mean, how about that, Steve? Despite this week's big announcement, it really does seem like all the speculation is focused on this potential White House bid. Does it feel to you like it's all but certain at this point, or is there still some wiggle room there?
It seems all but certain, doesn't it? Maybe a little wiggle room. I mean, things change. You can never say for certain. But that's really the big issue with this bid for a third term is, are you just going to then turn around? I mean, how much time are you going to devote to Illinois if you're running for president early into a third term? Which I think Republicans will obviously hit on when we get to that point. And I think, it's a fair question.
Well, Melody, state GOP leaders wasted no time sort of slamming Pritzker's record, and a lot of folks have also raised that point of, are you just, going to get reelected and then go turn around and run for president? But given, his sizable war chest, the ability of Governor Pritzker to self-fund at massive levels, do you think we're going to see a strong challenge from a Republican in the gubernatorial race?
You know, it's really hard to tell right now. I think one of the biggest things about J.B. Pritzker is obviously he's a billionaire. He spent, you know, $350 million on his first and second race for governor combined. And so I truly, you know, if I were to think about it right now, I can't think of anybody that's able to match that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, maybe Ken Griffin, but, you know, he is no longer with us here in this great state of Illinois. You know, Steve, you mentioned this idea of it's a long way off still. There could be some things that are changing, but Pritzker's really been trying to raise his national profile among potential voters outside of Illinois in mm-hmm. Democratic primaries. Does it feel like that's making a dent yet, or kind of too soon to tell?
Oh, I think he has succeeded in raising his profile. I think, and the jockeying among, you know, Democratic hopefuls is well underway. I mean, and there are various lanes that people have chosen. He's more in the left, maybe not quite as left as some, but left. And then there's others that, you know, after the what happened in November, that really think the party needs to move to the middle, and there are people representing that lane. All of those things are happening on the Sunday talk shows and in
Jimmy
the
Kimmel,
yes, on late night TV, and will continue to. I mean, this is going to go on for a while. So yes, I think he has succeeded in raising his profile.
Yeah, it feels like the 2028 race pretty much started as soon as the most recent one wrapped up.
Started
mm-hmm.
at DNC.
Yeah, no kidding.
And certainly yesterday's message very much designed to play to a national audience as well, not just lashing out at President Trump, but also at some of the folks in the Democratic Party who are trying to position themselves more to the center, and suggesting that that's cravenly in this moment and doesn't play well.
Yeah.
One thing I just want to add in terms of something that's going to be challenging for him is Illinois still struggling fiscally, its economy. In many respects, this is not a great story to run for national office on. So you see him much more focused on battling Donald Trump and you know, sticking up for people who are being, in his view, are being attacked and things like that. Not talking so much about, hey, what an amazing place Illinois has turned into under my watch, and what a great story we have to tell. So that's something that's we should watch.
Although you have to imagine he's going to say, we got all these credit upgrades, we've been doing this work to address the structural deficits.
Right. But I mean, it's hard to make. It's not some, you know, Massachusetts miracle. If you're going to go way back to the Dukakis time, typically governors want to run on some story of how their state did under their watch, and I think that's going to be tough for him.
Well, and Mitch, that kind of sounds like, you know, some of the laundry list items we were hearing, as you mentioned, Illinoisans and Pritzker voters and folks who are in that room supporting him. They kind of know all that stuff, so maybe the idea here is let's make sure other people hear this message about what's happened in Illinois.
Exactly, yeah, just kind of take it to a bigger stage, you know. You talked a lot about everything he did when COVID hit and sort of being a leader in crisis and, you know, almost comparing the current moment under President Trump to you know, a similar sort of crisis mode. You know, it's going to be interesting to see if that really resonates elsewhere. He's got name recognition more than anyone could possibly have in Illinois, and he's got money that no one can possibly match. You know, barring some sort of catastrophe, he's a heavy favorite to, you know, earn a third term, the first governor in Illinois to do that in four decades, I want to say. So, you know, can the Republicans put out anybody, or will they bother to put financial resources behind a candidate against him statewide that way? I don't know. We'll see.
Well, speaking of financial resources, Mila, Chicago's interim school CEO, says the district's deficit now stands at more than $700 million. What changed in the calculations there?
Well, in fairness, it's not an entirely new number. It was mentioned briefly by her predecessor, mm-hmm. former CEO Pedro Martinez, as a worst-case scenario. And what's different about that number compared to the $529 million number that the district was using until yesterday, really. What's different is that it includes this very controversial pension payment to a municipal pension fund that Pedro Martinez refused to make, and that contributed to his departure from Chicago Public Schools. And it also includes about $30 million to help with absorbing several Acero charter schools into the district.
Well, you know, CTU President Stacey Davis Gates wants the district to borrow to avoid major cuts. Do we know yet whether there's an appetite among board members to make that kind of a borrowing?
Certainly, including at the school board meeting yesterday, a number of school board members appointed by Mayor Brandon Johnson, who is obviously a former employee of the teachers union and a close ally, made it very clear that they have no appetite for making cuts and really pushed the new interim CEO to think away from cuts, and certainly cuts that would affect the classroom. There's a coalition of elected school board members who are very opposed to taking on more debt, which is very costly to CPS, but they are in the minority. So it'll be interesting to see in the coming weeks how this plays out.
Especially because they have such limited options between cuts and borrowing. There's only so much you can do. Melody, given that, you know, if they do take out loans, that's taxpayer money used to pay them back. Do you think that would be unpopular among Chicagoans, or are, you know, massive cuts at CPS schools going to be even more unpopular? How do you thread that needle?
Yeah, that's very difficult. I think no one is looking forward to an increased tax burden. But I think, you know, very realistically, no one wants to see resources cut at their kids' or friends' kids' schools, because, you know, education is important, obviously. But I think, like, right now, when we think about the state of the economy, people are really not looking for something that's gonna strengthen the burden that they're already feeling on their shoulders and make it even heavier further down the road.
Yeah. Mitch, as we mentioned earlier, Chicago police have agreed not to search vehicles based on the smell of marijuana. There's been some back and forth on this policy. How did we land it at this point with this agreement?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting agreement between CPD and a number of basically police reform advocacy groups. The Illinois Supreme Court has actually ruled that the scent of marijuana does actually constitute enough to justify a traffic stop. But CPD basically in this case acknowledged, we won't stop cars just for the smell. There has to be some sort of other, possible criminal situation that has drawn their attention to justify that stop. I think one, it's just sort of gives you an idea of just kind of the manpower issue at CPD. I mean, obviously they can't stop every car they see that, you know, has some weed scent.
If you drive around, there's a lot of cars.
Yeah.
I was going to say, there's even a point in the proposal where they're going to train CPD officers to know the difference between the smell of raw cannabis and burnt cannabis. And to me, it all smells the same. So I'm very interested, you know, how that is going to, like, affect this policy moving forward. But I also thought it was interesting that it was about a year's worth of data, 2024 to 2025, that there's actually not very many cars that are pulled over for, quote unquote, like, marijuana mm-hmm. smells.
Well, so. You were very well behaved in college, Melody. So good for you. Steve, Illinois, part of a coalition of some 20 states and Washington, D.C., suing the Trump administration over these widespread funding cuts. But this could get a little complicated. I mean, the Supreme Court today limited judges' ability to grant nationwide injunctions. Any idea whether that could have any impact on the case? Too soon to tell. It's all kind of a jumble.
Yeah, I think it is a jumble. It's very difficult to keep track of all of the litigation over the Trump executive orders and who's winning and who's losing. And when it gets to an appellate court, the district judge's ruling is overturned or it's not overturned. I mean, honestly, you could set up have a reporter just full-time put together a spreadsheet and update it, and it would be useful. But in terms of today's ruling, yeah, it does. It's a major one. So the Supreme Court has basically significantly restricted district judges' ability to issue nationwide injunctions. which has been happening a lot, and the Trump administration has been very angry about it. What that means is that I think in most immediately is that attorneys general in these various states, including Illinois, are going to have to be on plaintiffs on virtually all of these cases in order to have them apply in their states, because if they don't, then whatever relief is granted by that judge is not going to apply in that state. You know, Kwame Raoul's office is already swimming in this stuff. Mm-hmm. So it just makes that whole effort at that state office level that much harder.
Well, you know, and Supreme Court didn't make any ruling on the constitutionality of this birthright right. citizenship executive order. But yeah, if you're not in one of the 28 states that challenged it, it creates, you know, how confusing of a patchwork does that create when this goes into effect in 30
already
days?
It was already a confusing patchwork as it stood. So yes, it just makes it worse.
Another federal lawsuit related to some of the funding issues here, Mitch, a judge saying the Federal Transportation Department can't withhold funding from states that don't sort of fall in line with the administration's immigration crackdown. Sounds like we expect the Transportation Secretary to appeal this, yeah?
I'm sure, yeah. I mean, this is obviously just goes back to kind of the chaos and confusion that, you know, we've kind of seen here for the last 6 months or so now. And really, at the end of the day, like, that's kind of the biggest thing that the Trump administration can hold over Democratic states like Illinois, is withholding huge swaths of funding, which, you know, in Chicago especially, you know, we're relying on a lot of those federal dollars to come through for the Red Line extension, which right. has other issues of its own. That's where, even looking at this weekend, you know, Congress is going to be looking at the big, beautiful bill and all the other implications that's going to have for social services in Illinois. It's just kind of too much for anyone to sort of process at once.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of the sort of the immigration crackdown here, Melody, there was some reporting from the Tribune this week, another ICE subpoena for information, this one from employee information from folks at Streets and San. How tough of a spot is the city in here, you know, when they're trying to preserve the privacy of this data while complying with potentially legal subpoenas?
Mm-hmm. Very difficult. And I think, you know, one of the things that the Tribune pointed out is that the city hasn't even been able to say or hasn't said at all whether or not they've handed over specific personal information of city employees. And on those I-9s, which is part of the subpoena, is, you know, your social security number, your residency status, where you live, and all this, like, very sensitive data that, you know, the Tribune themselves tried to FOIA to see what the correspondence looked like. That FOIA was unsuccessful. It was denied. So I they're keeping it very close to their chest, and I think that's making a lot of people nervous.
Yeah, that's got to make a lot of city employees feel very uncomfortable. Well, speaking of the Tribune, Steve, the editorial board, after the city agreed to drop this proposed rideshare ordinance, Uber said it wouldn't stand in the way of a potential state bill allowing drivers to unionize. The editorial board says that's not the right way to go. Why not?
Well, I think what the editorial board was saying was that there are unintended consequences that come with unionizing gig workers. And in the case of Uber and Lyft, I think they're going to be moving towards self-driving cars anyway.
Right.
They already are in some other places. But this potentially hastens that, maybe moves Illinois more to the front of the line, down the line, assuming the unionization effort is successful. It's kind of a be careful what you wish for situation. On the board, we want there to be Ubers and Lyfts. They're necessary. They're a necessary part of the transit system in this city. So we understand the driver's point of view too, and it's a tough one, but that's our concern.
Yeah, law of unintended consequences. Another ordinance that maybe got pulled back, Mitch, a group of Alder people initially appeared to back an effort by their colleague Emma Mitz requiring all sorts of external security cameras at businesses and then kind of changed their minds. What changed there?
It turns out a lot of them didn't actually read the ordinance.
Oh, well.
Imagine that. Yeah, lawmakers not doing that. Basically, what this ordinance would do would require just about all businesses to have front-facing surveillance cameras, you know, basically to help in police investigations when there's a crash or a shooting or something, which raises all kinds of privacy concerns. Chicago's already one of the most surveilled cities in the world, actually, when you count, you know, the highway cameras and the blue boxes that are, you know, all around the city. But it's it was tough for a lot of older people to swallow, you know, kind of adding tens of thousands of more cameras to that network. So I think that's going to take a lot more tweaking to make it more palatable.
A major
folks.
Unfunded mandate on business.
Right.
That, you know, it's already tough enough to do business in this city.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, really, even beyond the surveillance issues, if you're a small business owner, how skeptical are you of this, you know, the city coming in and saying, you must put these cameras in place?
Yes, there is definitely some skepticism from the small business community. And as it turned out, some of the aldermen who originally supported the proposal but then realized that it didn't say what they understood it said, apparently share that concern very much so.
Yeah, it's a good lesson in reading through things carefully.
Yes.
Well, Melody, we learned this week Aldi is taking over a former Whole Foods space in River North. I imagine this is pretty welcome news given the fact that, you know, sort of downtown, the surrounding neighborhoods, there's still a fair amount of vacancies there.
Yes, absolutely. I think people are excited to see what a vacancy left by a grocery store is being filled by a grocery store. That area particularly, it can be difficult to really find something that's really full service and also affordable. And I know there are a lot of Aldi fanatics out there, and this will actually be one of the only centralized in the Northern Loop area. So I think this is very much needed for the community and that people are excited about it.
Yeah, you have to imagine, you mentioned it, sort of the point of the costs that people are facing, this is kind of a welcome option. It's a more of an affordable place to go shopping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know a lot. An affordable thing, not just for produce, but for knickknacks and all of that fun stuff, too. And wine.
Yeah, well, yes. You can
don't forget the wine.
That's right.
Can't forget Aldi wine.
You can count me as one of the Aldi fanatics. I will proudly own that. All right, well, we also heard about a vacant spot across from the future Bally's Casino. Universal Studios planning to turn this into an immersive horror experience.
Yes.
Hopefully not some sort of a metaphor there.
Yeah.
What are the details?
I was going to say, insert City Hall.
Right,
here.
There's something here.
So this was originally supposed to be the temporary site for the Bally's Casino, but instead we know they went to Medina Temple in River North instead. Now they're going to turn this giant space into a year-round, permanent, immersive horror experience. Think like haunted house, horror house 2.0, but with like fun bars, merchandise, themes related to Universal trademarked movies and characters like Dracula, Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Those old family favorites.
Yes, you know. So that is going to be slated to hopefully begin construction in 2026 and open in 2027, which would be in line with the opening of the Bally's permanent facility.
So if you're feeling scared about how much money you lost, then you can go over there and feel
there.
More scared. I mean, and the city was part of this announcement. It seems like they're hopeful this will be kind of a big tourist draw to the area.
Yes, absolutely. I think this is part of the whole idea of making that Bally's corner part of the city an attraction. People will be going to Bally's, you know, to gamble, maybe stay there for conventions, but people also want things to do, and I think that this Universal experience is going to be part of that.
I wonder what the overlap between casino goers and immersive horror attendees is, though. I'm just wondering.
You never know. I mean, we were kind of talking about this earlier, though. It seems like it is more of these experiences that people want to have that are becoming the draws.
Yeah, there's a lot of economic development in this part of Chicago and on the Mag Mile is focused on these experiential things, which it makes sense. I mean, the traditional retail is really, really struggling, and getting some, you know, attractions that bring people in and foot traffic and all of that is smart. What we should be doing.
Well, that's going to be a haunted house, but there was nothing horrible about tonight's panel, though. Unfortunately, that is all the time that we have. So our thanks to Mitchell Armentrout, Mila Kumpilova, Melody Mercado, and Steve Daniels. And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that's our show for this Friday night. Be sure to sign up for our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan, at WTTW.com/newsletter. And you can also stay connected by following us on Blue Sky at WTTW. Now for the Week in Review, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay informed. Have a great weekend. Okay, Melody, not going to be a permanent fixture, but a one-day pop-up, I believe, from New York's iconic Katz's Deli, featured in When Harry Met Sally, if you know, you know. What are the details about this?
So it will cost you $45.
Oh, wow.
And you do have to sign up ahead of time. It's part of a pop-up for the Windy City Smokeout, and it's going to be July 9th. And so, you know, what's going to be available there is going to be their iconic sort of pastrami sandwich, and then you get a couple other sides, and it's really just, again, as we were just talking about, experiences that people will be able to take part in, you know, July 9th.
A little less scary. Okay, anyone thinking about visiting the Universal Horror House when it opens? Any horror fans?
I don't know, maybe. No.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports educational initiatives in the legal profession.